You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
If you're in business, you probably have a website. But can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pear.com.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities, and though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, it's coming to me. Oh my gosh, I foresee we'll be talking about Dream Girl. I see we're going to be talking about Dream Girl.
Legion of Superheroes number 291, A Sign of Darkness Dawning. Published September 1982. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Keith Given on breakdowns and Larry Malstedt on finished art. Synopsis: the servants of darkness attack, and the legionnaires are overwhelmed.
One of the things that really surprised me in the opening of this issue, Matthew, was that It says chapter 2 of the Great Darkness Saga. And I was like, I don't remember them saying in the previous issue that this was chapter 1. And I went back and it's there, but it's kind of buried in with all the other text stuff that's going on. It's not a standout. In this one, it's a yellow box on a green background.
Right.
And so I think that that's really kind of telling, because it seems like by 1982, we finally, DC has finally figured out that it's okay to tell multi-part stories and finally catch up to what Marvel Comics is doing.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting to see this, because today we're used to seeing on the cover part 1 of 6, or we're used to being told right up front, this is what this is. And Bronze Age storytelling hasn't done that necessarily. Even, at the height of Marvel, you wouldn't always get part X or part Y. It wouldn't tell you what was going on. So I find it interesting to see that they're clearly marking what's going on, although they still don't tell us how many parts this big giant saga is going to be.
No, and I think that's fair, and I think it's fine, because then at least, well, there's two things that can happen here. Number one, someone picks this up and is like, ooh, I need to go track down number one. And certainly we have a rise of local comic shops and back issues at this point in history, so this probably wouldn't be totally uncommon to be able to find the last month's issue of this. Number two, it says, hey, they know what they're doing, and this is part of a longer story. And again, I'm thinking 1982 terms, not today terms, where it's like chapter 2 and 3 tend to be the slow, nothing happens issues, and then we get into the let's wait till issues 4, 5, and 6. This tells people that the publisher is committed to telling a long, drawn out story. So I feel like I'm not just getting a done in one kind of thing like that I see in the past. So to me, from a reader in 1982 picking this up, I'd say, oh, this feels like a commitment now. This feels like they're being serious about storytelling.
Right. And, in 1982, I don't know about you, but I know I had access to not necessarily comic shops, but places where if I went to the local drugstore, last month's stuff would still be on the stands.
So if
I came in looking for 291, 290 might still be back there, presuming that, they ordered enough copies.
Yeah, at my comic shops, that I went to in the 80s, they usually had three rows. The first one in front was the brand new one. The one immediately behind it was the issue before, and the one behind that was two issues ago, depending on, the size of the comic shop. If they had a four-row system, it would just be the previous month's comic and then another comic behind that with its previous month's. And then you would have to go to the back issue bins or ask the person at the counter if they had the previous month's comic. But, you know, they're wasting no time getting into this story, which I like, especially because they're like, oh, this looks to be one of your ancestors, one of your ancient ancestors. How could that be?
It's nice to see this sort of storytelling, too, because the bit with Lydia Mallor, who is Shadow Lass's great, great, great grandmother, I don't know, however many greats she is, keeps coming back. And Levitz and Giffen actually do bring her back. Giffen brings her back in the modern era in a few years when they launch Legion 89.
Mm-hmm.
The real Lydia Mallor actually appears for the first time some years after this evil corrupted clone. So it's kind of neat to see them sort of building in these plot points that they can play with later.
I like the, she is your reverse ancestor, whatever that means.
A reverse ancestor is actually like her, a Rortzesnack.
Her polarity had been switched. That's how you know it's her reverse.
Oh, the third doctor was in play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, on Planet Mordru.
Xerox.
Yeah, yeah, Planet Mordru. you know, you've got another crusty critter taking down Mordru, which I'm rather surprised that they're able to take down Mordru with just like a snap of the finger, right? Because we have seen time and time and time again that mm-hmm. Mordru is one of the greatest, powerful, can take out the entire Legion in one go with just a blink of his eye if he decides to.
Yes.
And yet we see Orion, reverse Orion, mm-hmm. Take him out just like that. And
The unseen dark side.
Oh, maybe it is.
Who actually takes him down. Yeah, Orion unearths him, and then Darkseid with the big pointy shoulders takes him out. But this, is very early.
Yeah.
In the Darkseid run. And I really kind of like that, the shock value, that sort of there are no rules Wild West storytelling where it's like, okay, Darkseid was in a book called The New Gods. We're gonna decide he's a god, and Mordru is just a guy in a pink dress, and so, you know, he's powerful enough to take on the Legion, but we're gonna set up this new threat by just completely taking him down in one panel. And that kind of gets overused in comics in the modern day, especially in the 90s era, but here it almost, I remember reading this and thinking, oh my god, oh my god, they just, but Mordru, he's, oh, oh my gosh.
Well, I guess my bigger question reading this and knowing what's happening is, why does mm-hmm. Darkseid need magic? Darkseid has never been a magical being, to my knowledge. He's always been technology. That's Kirby's whole shtick is technology is so far advanced that it looks like magic, but doesn't use magic.
I think, as we saw with the controller, I think he's just absorbing any and all power sources that he can. I am neither wizard nor mortal. I am the master of all who live. Wait, that's my Batman voice. I can't do my Darkseid voice. I need some tea, and I'd have to go on vocal rest. But, it is weird, first of all, that the Legion of Superheroes, this future team, has a giant mystic villain in the first place. But I kind of like the fact that they don't really differentiate between Mordru's magic power source and the controller's alien technology power source. Darkseid is just like, yeah, I'll eat it all. It's fine.
Yeah. And that's the thing that doesn't sit right with me in this is, you know, are they going, or is he just after power and is magic just a form of power, or mm-hmm. is it something else? In which case I could be okay with that. But again, magic is a totally different thing that Kirby never was really dealing with in mm-hmm. in his Fourth World stuff. So I look at this and I'm like, this seems, they wouldn't have had to bring Mordru in if they wanted to do something, have him take out Manos, have him take out the Fatal Five.
Have
him take out get the Emerald Eye going on. But I don't know. It just seems really weird here.
So, I think that you're kind of looking at it from that modern perspective where we do have kind of power grading. We do have an expectation that, you know, say, for instance, if you have Iron Fist is not going to take out Galactus. And if he does, it's going to be crazy. But having that weird crossover of Darkseid in 1982, like literally snapping his fingers and taking out the Legion's most dangerous villain, I feel like it's just more of a, hey, you guys, look how powerful this unseen person is. And I don't necessarily know that, honestly, Kirby stuff, magic and technology are kind of the same thing. But I can see your point. I don't necessarily think that in 1982, Levitz and Giffen are in any way considering it.
Yeah, it's just something that to me, I was just like, eh, that's a little weird. Meanwhile, yeah. I sense some trouble brewing at Legion headquarters. If only the visions were clear to me, Matthew. I see it now. There's a thing that's going on. What is it? It's becoming clear.
It's Legion election.
Yeah, it's a Legion election. That's exactly what I was saying. Oh, yes. I'm reading the future, Matthew. The Legion election that's coming up, and it may not be a man that would be the leader. Oh, almost like a woman has been the leader in the past. And
I'm not going to enable your dream girl smashing anymore. I'm not going to play along.
Oh, that's okay, because I can do this for like another 20 minutes. It's like,
yeah, I know.
If she knew she was going to become the leader, why even have an election? They could have just asked her and said, oh, so who's going to be the next leader? She said, this is me. Oh, well, I guess then it's going to be you. But it's just,
that's not how her powers work.
Do her powers actually work? Because there's a big prison break and she's like, oh, I sense something. Oh, but I can't make it out. And they're like, oh, yeah. OK, great. We'll go and take care of this. So they send Mon-El and they send
Ultra Boy
out to take care of the prison break. And right in the middle of it, they got to do some politicking to see who they're going to vote for, which is like, come on, guys.
It's kind of neat, though, to see. You know, we've seen this a little bit before, but one of Levitz's big things is setting up these kind of cliques and subgroups. And this close friendship between Mon-El and Ultra Boy is really kind of fun. It's kind of fun seeing that as a regular thing because, you know, 6 times out of 10, when there's a problem, what do? Mon-El and Ultra Boy will be there in a couple of seconds. Everyone else will follow in a cruiser. And so you figure that at super speed, these guys have time to, you know, hang out, talk, and enjoy a Kono juice. But even, you know, if you take into account that, yes, Ultra Boy is kind of being a schmuck for politicking, it's neat to see that friendship at play. And it's also kind of telling that Element Lad, who is our acting leader, is just like, you know what? Send those to assess the situation. That's kind of neat, too. You know, the two guys with Superboy powers can probably handle anything. And normally I'd hate that, but here I kind of love it. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah, it's too bad that they don't last long because Reverse Orion is trying to escape. And Mon-El flies into the warp hole.
Yeah.
The boom tube. And that's going to spell trouble for him and his entire populace. Meanwhile,
punched in the face.
Speaking of Superboy, he is there to check out and see how Lightning Lad's doing. And of course, Saturn Girl is like, oh, I'm still mourning for something that no one knows what I did. And it's no big deal.
Don't be that guy. But yeah, she's upset about that. But she's also upset about the strange brain fever that has overtaken her husband since this happened. She's literally blaming herself for her husband getting sick, which I guess I understand the guilt part of it, but I'm also like, just stop it.
Yeah. They also I have in my notes that there is an experimental transporter that is being used here.
And yes, that's how Mon-El and Ultra Boy got teleported out, but it's a one-way transport.
And they're going to use this a whole bunch in the future. I know this is just going to be a new thing.
Oh yeah,
right?
Absolutely. It's going to happen all the time.
Yeah. I foresee it happening.
It'll be like,
yes, it's destined to happen. After. My dream powers tell me.
Don't be that guy.
Also, we get to see the Time Trapper's face again.
Mm-hmm. He's a controller.
Yeah.
You can tell the controllers because controllers have a big jewel on their forehead. Whereas a Dominator would have just a big red circle on his forehead.
And he'd also have some scary dental work going on.
Right. But they haven't yet established, and I kind of like this, but they establish eventually that the controller at this point is merely one of the possible time trappers.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the weird paradoxes of time, space, and dimension, the time trapper's identity actually changes.
Yeah.
And I like that. I kind of wish we had, you know, explicitly seen that a little earlier, but mm-hmm. this is the same controller that we saw taken down in that damn Legion tabloid, the wedding tabloid, a few episodes ago when Saturn yeah. Girl and Lightning Lad got married.
Yep. Also, we get a run in with the White Witch, who, again, I'm using my powers. I foresee that she will play an important role in the Great Darkness saga. I foresee this.
Yep.
I'm not a fan
of
the White
Your
Witch.
Powers are right.
I'm not a
lover.
I'm not. I just whatever she's got going on with her eyelashes is just silly. Mm-hmm. And
it's interesting.
There's
though,
nobody else on her planet that looks like that.
She didn't look like that previously.
I know. She's gone through a huge change, and it's like, okay, that it's not spelled out right. It's not explained why she has this new look. Why doesn't
she's
anyone else on her
magic? And it's making her eyelashes grow into. An
is
DNA.
That what it is, or is it just like, hey, let's make her look more creepy and alien?
I honestly don't know if they ever did explain that. I know that this. I will state this with 80% certainty, and Legion Omnicom is out there. He will correct me if we're wrong. This is the point where we first see the White Witch in her
yes.
mutated
this
clear
is the,
form.
This is the first time that we see her in her all white witch form,
yeah.
her albino.
So I don't recall if they ever outright say magic has changed her. But when you look at the other sorcerers, how the sorcerers, like one guy has flame on his head and one girl has hair that's made of smoke or something, it kind of
feels
like...
Well, that's
because
they're the elemental wizards or whatever. We'll find out about them in the next issue, I think, right?
The more you mess with magic, the weirder you get, I feel. And I've always loved this White Witch design. I was very confused because I saw her like this before I ever saw the flashbacks when she was just like a red haired girl with a Snoopy haircut,
mm-hmm.
not a Snoopy, a Lucy from Charlie Brown haircut. And it is confusing. And at one point I seem to recall going through and trying to find when did they explain this transition? And I can't for the life of me remember if they ever did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great look for me.
Also, we find out in this issue that Dream Girl is the next leader of the Legion. From now on, she'll use her powers to prophesize how all future missions will go, and she will act accordingly, meaning that if she sees that the Legion is going to die, she just won't send them on that mission, right? That's exactly how that works.
Now, are you still reading the trade paperback reprints?
These are not the black and whites. These are the omnibus collections.
The full color ones?
Yeah.
Now, is the backup story drawn
backup
by Keith Giffen?
Well, it's two people. It's Keith Giffen right. and Larry Molstad, yeah. or Molstad.
That's
and I
that
like his
version
art.
Is actually redrawn.
Oh, really?
The original comic, yeah, the original 291 had the backup story drawn by a completely different team, a different set of creators entirely. It was Howard Bender and Rodin Rodriguez. But when they collected it in, I think, in that first time it was trade paperbacked when we were in college in like the late 80s. Giffen went back and he redrew this story. And so if you look at this, the Giffen
is there a reason why?
I don't remember. I haven't found a reason why. But the Giffen Malmstead art that you see in this backup is actually a different style than the Giffen that we see in 82. And I yeah. want to say this was redrawn and after he went through his problematic period when he was obsessed with the work of Munoz, but I think it would have been about the time that they brought back the 5-year gap Legion in 1989, the Volume 4 Legion. And I think, just based on the art that we're seeing here, it would have been redone around then. But I can't find anything that explains other than we wanted it to be a Giffen Malst or a Giffen Levitz joint all the way through when we reprinted it, why they would redraw this whole story.
Yeah, I just assumed that because Giffen is only credited with the breakdowns on this backup. With Malmstead doing the finished art. So I just attributed the change in the art style that I kind of like and that is reminiscent to me of Archie Legion type stuff. to be just, you know, his inking or his finals on this.
Yeah, it's actually Giffen probably almost a decade later. But
yeah,
it looks great either way.
No, it looks really good. It's a fun story. It's really interesting. It's really good. I enjoyed a lot. I've often, you know, said that I think it would be cool for people to, and I would have to go, I would like to go and see the original art of this to see if it is the same layouts, but just drawn differently, or if it is a total reimagination of this in how it's illustrated. Because I've said before that I think it would be a fantastic thing to go and say, okay, here's this story. Let's let Rob Liefeld draw it. Let's let Jim Lee draw this same thing. And then let's let Todd McFarlane draw this same story and just see how the art changes from person to person. It's almost like when you remake a movie or something and it's the same story, but it's, you know, it's a different interpretation from the visuals. I've always thought that that would be an interesting experiment to see. So I would really like to go and track down the original issue of this and look at the original art just to kind of see how that is. I know it's controversial because the letters, the words are all the same. So the person who wrote it still is there. And it's and when you go in and you talk about redoing the art or erasing other people, you're erasing half of that creative process in the way that it was originally done, which is super problematic. And we see that today when they go in and they do reprints of these issues, probably like the ones we're looking at here, where the colors are completely different. Famously in the Joker Killing Joke story, more recently in the republishings of that, they've gone in and recolored the entire comic book and made it look more, I don't want to say palatable, but make it look more, I guess, normal, quote unquote, compared to what was the original colors in the piece, which were often garish and nightmarish and intended, I think, to kind of creep you out a little bit in the colors. But now when you look at it, it doesn't look like the same. And a lot of people complain when you go back in and you even do something like the color. So to go back in and redo all of the art because you wanted it to be a Levitz Giffen joint throughout seems on the surface seems like a great experiment. But on the other hand, I can see where we're erasing two creators, or, you know, a creator in this process that we don't talk about anymore. So,
yeah, Bender and Rodriguez, not to be confused with Bender Bending Rodriguez, who is Fry's robot from Futurama. But looking at the actual version that I have and the version in the reprint, the Giffen version, they're very similar, but they're not identical. And it almost feels a little bit in places like Carmine Infantino. Especially the final panel with Saturn Girl looking at the breakdown. She looks very much like a Carmine Infantino face. And I don't know. The only thing that I can think of is that because everything else in the Great Darkness saga was drawn by Giffen, I'm wondering if when they collected it, when they're doing the trade, did they say, hey, let's just go ahead and do everything by Giffen. So
Maybe. I mean, I can see that as a justification. I mean, for those of you that don't know what goes on in this story, Saturn Girl is lamenting the fact that Lightning Lad is still unconscious and she gets attacked by reverse Shadow Lass ancestor. And Lightning Lad wakes up and takes her out when Saturn Girl and Lightning or Cosmic Boy are taken out. And then he goes back to sleep. And that's the end of that that story. But yeah, that's interesting to know about the art there.
And he doesn't die of the brain fever that killed Ma and Pa Kent in the pre-crisis Earth One reality, which, you know, it's this, I think, is the first meaningful interaction we've had with Superboy since he left the team back in 279 because he didn't want to know about his parents' future, you know, fate, basically how his parents died. And somehow his brain got transreversed, erased, and now this is literally how they died. So I don't know if that's a good thing or if that's a just like a weird fillip on a fillip, but it's kind of neat to me. So.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Legion of Superheroes, number 292, Darkness Transcendent.
Published October 1982. Written by Paul Levitz with art by Keith Giffen on breakdowns and Larry Malstedt on finished art. Synopsis: will an infant be the key to saving the universe from eternal darkness?
All right, let us jump into issue 292 of this story.
This may be one of my favorite covers.
Why is that?
I think it's the 35-year-old baby looking at us, but also just, I remember when I saw this, and this one I didn't buy new off the stands. I bought it after the fact, but I look at Sunboy on this cover and I'm like, wow, Sunboy should always look that cool. And if you look at Orion, Orion looks so scary and monstrous and zombie-like. Even Brainiac 5 looks like he's a giant action hero. So, you know, 1983, 82, when I'm buying this, I have no idea who these people are, but I know that the fire guy is cool and purple coveralls guy is great.
Who did the cover? And then there's, who did the cover art?
This is Giffen. I think it may be Giffen and Malstedt,
but
it's definitely a Giffen pencil. So,
yeah, because I'm just, when you flip the cover and you look at the more technical detail that you see on the interiors, it just doesn't feel like it's the same art as the cover. That's why I was wondering if it was a different artist doing that.
It's definitely Giffen pencils, and I can tell you that from Brainiac 5's facial shape. Now, who did the inks? Could be Dick Giordano, honestly, at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, they're repairing the prison from the prison break from the last issue. Somebody makes a comment about how Dream Girl is a pretty leader. Chameleon Boy, the way that they keep him from using his powers is they clamp down on his antennae.
Yeah, antenna clamps are kind of cool. Or are they terrifying?
I don't know, because we've never seen him be restrained in that way, right? It's never been, oh, the only way we can prevent him from shapeshifting is by holding on to his antennas. It's not really explained about anywhere of how that works. It's like, well, yes, if you've got somebody in handcuffs, it hinders their movement right. A little bit, but they can still get away. And certainly if they have the powers to phase through something, or if they have heat powers or something, they can easily melt those cuffs and get away. And if you are, you know, if you are Elastiband zip tied arrested, you know, today, it's relatively easy if you've got the fortitude to twist your wrists and break those and get away. So I'm not sure that, you know, we've seen in the Flash television show where they have those inhibitor collars and cuffs that they put on metahumans to dampen their abilities. But there's nothing here that says that this is a inhibitor for his powers. And if it is, then why don't they slap some of those on Mordru? Why can't they slap some of those on all of their prisoners? And that prison break from last issue would never have been an issue.
I believe it's specifically for Derlands. And I don't know that we've ever seen the...
Why do we have technology specifically to restrain Derlands?
Oh, stop it. We have established that the Derlands use their antennae to scan something that they want to turn into, to basically kind of take in its shape on some level. I don't recall ever seeing that you could, you know, bind their antenna and keep them from shape-shifting, but I actually kind of don't hate it, because it makes sense that in the United Planets, when you have all of these different people with all of these different abilities, that you would have something, you know, maybe not necessarily something that would hold a Daxamite, but you'd have something that would hold somebody from Derla, or you would have something that would hold somebody from Titan and neutralize their psionic powers if they were dangerous. So it honestly feels like the UP may be ahead of the game here. Although, yeah, you're right. It does feel kind of
those filthy Derlands. Those filthy Derlands. Oh, wait a minute. I'm getting a vision. I'm getting a vision, Matthew. A vision.
Is it my finger?
Yes, it is. It is this little stubby finger pointing at the screen and saying, yes, Dream Girl. She says to everyone present that she shouldn't be a member of the Legion of Superheroes, right there in black and white. I had a premonition that we would fight the servants again here on Sorcerer's World and that we would lose. I intend to prove my prediction wrong. So if your prediction is wrong, if you're envisioning things and you got on the team because your visions are right and then you're proving them wrong, should you even be a member of the Legion of Superheroes? I say nay. They need
it's
to really.
That
they
Invisible
really,
Kid is kind of semi-transparent all the time.
Yeah,
I really
yeah.
like that.
They really need to figure out a lot of people's powers, but hers specifically, hers and Princess Projectress specifically, in that you cannot have Vagary. Well, I'll give you another one. Here's a Light Lass is also in this same panel where she's hearing, Dream Girl says she shouldn't be leader of the Legion anymore. So Light Lass, her powers is to make things light, correct?
She can negate gravity, yes.
But then does she also? So what happens if she negates the gravity on somebody? What happens to them?
They float.
Okay.
They
And then do they float forever?
No. Her power does wear off.
Oh, her powers do wear off, or she has the power to reverse that?
Her powers do wear off. We have seen that things that float don't float forever. Okay. And, you know, if she does something wrong, there's always Starboy.
Well, that was my thing, right? Because if she can make something light and then say, okay, I've disabled this guy, I'm now going to make him heavy to come back to the ground so he's not light anymore, isn't she doing the exact same thing that Starboy's doing, making things heavy? And likewise, Starboy, can he also make things light?
No, he can't.
So he once
can
he makes something heavy,
mass.
Once its mass is increased, it can never go back.
Again, the powers do wear off after a while.
Okay.
Never really established. But this is the thing. You can't necessarily have a character who sees the future ever see the future with 100% certainty, because at that point you've painted yourself into a narrative corner.
Yeah.
It's kind of that same question of why doesn't Superman just fly around at super speed and punch everybody to death when they're
evil?
Well,
because he doesn't
because
kill.
That's not, well, yeah, but it's also not an interesting story. If Dream Girl's predictions were always 100% correct.
And I would argue that her predictions are maybe 5 to 10% correct.
I will agree with you that they are definitely overplaying the, oh my God, here's a disaster coming. Will it happen? How do we stop it? Especially in the last few years of the Legion. But I feel like if her premonitions were always right, it would be super dull. It would be, you know, the worst things that people
also
say about Batman,
but again,
is always prepared.
You've kind of made my argument for me is, if she's only right 5 or 10% of the time, why is she on the team? That doesn't seem like
you right in predicting the future?
Well, I'm not sitting here claiming that I have the ability to see the far future. but on my predictions,
so she has a higher level. She has a superhuman.
Oh no,
level.
I would say that I'm when it comes to my predictions, when I predict something, I'm right probably 60-70% of the time, and you know that from past instances. Not right
I
all the time.
Think 60 to 70.
I would put money on,
you
on
are,
60 to 70.
But more importantly, I think that it's the superhuman part that, you know, brings it into play. I mean, if you look at Block's power is being more massive than anybody else. I do that, but I don't do it to a superhuman level. Just like, you know, you look at Sunboy, he's a hothead. We both do that, but not at a superhuman.
But that's not
level,
his. But so. That's not his power. His power is not to be a hothead.
His head catches fire.
No, but that's not his. That's not his power. His power is to
Dream Girl's fine.
I don't think so. I think
Dream Girl.
No, I just don't think that she is. She has never once proven her worth on the team, because every time she does, she's like, oh, I guess I was wrong. She is as accurate as someone. And that's why I joke all the time about doing cold readings. She is as accurate as someone and realistic as someone who is doing cold readings. I just don't. They have not, to my satisfaction, nailed down her powers to be more than a parlor trick that keeps all of the other Legion members entertained. That's my problem.
But she does it on a cosmic level.
No, it's not.
Rosabelle, sweet Rosabelle.
Anyway, they go down to this planet, this wizard planet, the magic planet.
Xerox.
Is it Xerox? Because I thought that was somewhere else where they had Mordru at. That's not the same place as this, is it?
No, they. I'm sorry. They had Mordru on Avalon. This is Xerox, the wizard's planet. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was thinking of him being a wizard. He's actually trapped on a different planet.
Mm-hmm. We do, though, get to finally see Kalibak make an appearance in this issue.
Yay.
So that's interesting.
For all the Kalibak fans in the audience, all five of you.
Well, we've talked before. And if you go back and read every single issue that pertains to the Great Darkness Saga, you see them dropping hints left and right. Right. We see the Kirby mm-hmm. dots first appearance. Like, well, why are they using Kirby dots? Oh, in hindsight, it's because this is all fourth world stuff. You see, you finally see when the Orion character, when he says my son, and you're like, wow, why is that guy flying on Orion's
nice.
Oh, I see. And then we sweeten the deal with both the Superman, the reverse Superman, and the Kalibak figures appearing. So at this point, especially when Mon-El is fighting the darkness, wherever he's at inside the zone, and he finally says, holy crap, I know who you are. And then Darkseid sitting there with his laser beam starting, his eyes are smoking here, and he looks more like the crusty Darkseid that we know. At this point, everyone should know, oh, this is Darkseid that's back. Oh, no wonder they're calling it the Great Darkness Saga.
Yeah. So, and I think that's good, honestly. I feel like if you put in these hints or, you know, things that could be taken, things like an Ellery Queen novel where here's kind of how thing could go. Here's the evidence that you have for the novel.
Let's not get started on Ellery Queen because
Ellery Queen doesn't always play fair. I grant that, but he plays fairer than some guys. And I feel like that's a successful story for me. If your readers are like, hey, I know who this is. I've put together these visual clues and this is Darkseid.
Mm-hmm.
And they figured out before Brainiac 5. I feel like that's satisfying for the readers. That's actually good storytelling.
Yeah.
To me, anyway.
No, I enjoy these issues. Last three issues of this have been very good, very solid storytelling in this. I really enjoy it.
And they knock the bazonga out of poor Mon-El. They destroy his Nehru jacket. Ugh. It's just, he's going to have to go back. He's going to have to find another store on Carnaby Street. It's just terrible.
Yes, Perry the Platypus is a huge influence to Brainiac 5 because Brainiac 5 has to invent the Augmentinator.
Ator.
We also see who all the clones are, I think, in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, Saturn Girl and Cosmic Boy and Lightning Lad are going through and figuring it all out.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a 50-year-old baby showing up.
Nice.
It's like all the magic people combine and call forth Beelzebub or whoever, because there's Captain a big fiery circle.
And Earth, they form air, fire, water, and heart.
They form to create a blue-eyed, blonde-haired baby. That's not going to cause them trouble in the future.
How are ya? I'm a baby. I feel like I see what they're going for here. And if you know who the blue-eyed, blonde-haired baby is at this point, I'm going to be honest, you're probably reading this for the second or third time. But more importantly, that baby is indicative of something that I've said for years about comics. And it is that if you are trained to draw superheroes, drawing children or babies is incredibly difficult.
I think we've talked about this before, like when they all got turned into babies in that one issue. Mm-hmm. That was really creepy.
Those four issues throughout the year 1967 when the entire Legion got turned into babies off and on. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I just
Giffen kind of it's a big baby. A big baby. I didn't personally have, but my child was a big baby, and that is a big baby. I mean, that's, you know, I just feel glad that that child was created by Earth, Air, Fire, Water, and Heart, and not necessarily, you know, that's a big baby.
We just need to shave his head and put a blue arrow on it, and we have our
Captain
savior.
Captain Planet, don't even.
What? What's wrong?
Mock Aang.
I'm not.
There's nothing
Aang is
wrong
the last
with
Avatar.
Aang.
He is the savior. I would never mock last Avatar.
I was busy mocking Captain Planet, and you brought up Aang.
That's because nobody cares about Captain Planet.
That makes people think about the fact that it's the same show and get very, very confused.
Oh, Captain Planet and Avatar The Last Airbender are not the same show.
Oh, they're exactly the same show.
They are not.
That crazy evil woman, Dr. Blight, She is exactly the same as Combustion Man. And if you look at like Sokka, Sokka is just like Mati with a bald head. Right. It's exactly what
say,
it is.
Say goodnight, Matthew.
Goodnight, Matthew.
Matthew, what did we learn this week on the Legion Clubhouse?
We learned that in the future, children will be huge.
I think we also learned that when a mommy wizard and a daddy wizard love one another very, very much, they form a secret hole to hell, a secret portal to hell, and out comes your offspring.
And most importantly, we learned that Darkseid is a cruel, cruel, cruel creature because the one son that fought him was reborn as an undead zombie and forced to be incredibly loyal. That is some twisted Freudian psychological stuff there.
I mean, is it though? Because if it was like if it was a mind controlled clone, that would be one thing. But if it's literally the polar reverse of that, so one could argue that it's just a facsimile of his son for his own twisted pleasure. But the real Orion knows nothing about it because the real Orion is dead. So are all the rest. So are we all by the time this story takes place in the far future. Thank you so much, everybody, for checking us out this week. If you have any questions, podcastmajorspoilers.com. And until next time, I'm Big Baby Man.
And I'm Dream Girl Defender Kid.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.